From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made about 4 hours ago as students in Rochester once again marched and demonstrated against proposed cuts to teaching positions in the Rochester City School District. The cost-cutting plan will go before the Board of Education on Thursday, and it involves laying off a number of teachers along with other district personnel. Superintendent Terry Dade has said the district would never want to eliminate teaching jobs in the middle of a school year, but the district's finances have been so badly mismanaged that it must be done. The superintendent has also been working with the Rochester Teachers Association, talking about other options, and some state lawmakers have made their voices heard, including Assemblywoman Jamie Romeo, saying that New York State could have a role to play in finding a solution, whether it's looking at the formula for aid. There's been a lot of talk about a one-shot deal to make sure that we can get through the school year without disrupting classrooms next month. And some critics on this program last week pointed to the president of the Rochester Teachers Association, Adam Urbanski. He's been in that role for more than 3 decades, and one of our guests on Friday said he should vacate that role in favor of someone else. Well, today's a chance for him to respond and to talk about the emergency that the city school district is facing. The president of the Rochester Teachers Association since 1981, Adam Urbanski, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Well, we were just talking before the program began about the fact that in your memory, this would be the first time you've ever really seen a significant number of mid-year teaching cuts.
This is about the worst way to manage a predicament like this. And that's why it's unheard of. If you have to make adjustments, common sense would dictate that you do it at the conclusion of the academic school year. You don't callously disrupt the relationships that students have built with each other, with their teachers. As a matter of fact, building relationships with your students is the foundation of good teaching. So I'm hardly a fan of what this superintendent is recommending. And when he says that he's got no choice, he's not really telling the truth. He does have a choice. The school board has a choice. The parents and students and teachers have been saying the same thing to the Board of Education. Do not try to rectify this problem at the expense of our students and the disruption that this causes to them.
What's the choice, though? You say he does have a choice. He says there's not enough in terms of administration and higher-ups to cut there, and that you just can't do this without some cuts to teaching positions.
Well, you know, if you're going to be fair about it, the fact is that while he's cutting 155 teachers, he's eliminating a single one position in the top echelons of central office bureaucracy. Only one position. It is diametrically contrary to what he committed to in a videotaped message to all teachers, that he would not be making any cuts of teachers this year. And if any cuts must be made, they would be made as far away from the classroom as possible. And instead, he's doing exactly the opposite. Part of the frustration that parents and students and teachers have is precisely that he is sparing the bureaucracy instead of sparing our students.
But can you cut enough from the bureaucracy to cut? I mean, do you think we can have a solution that cuts zero teachers mid-year?
Well, we have a solution, a proposed solution, that we have put in front of the Board of Education and continue to press forward. And that is that you first and foremost think about the students. Do not disrupt them in the middle of the school year. This kind of a Christmas massacre is unthinkable and unconscionable. Postpone any action until, one, we can find out how they got themselves into this mess. Neither teachers nor their students caused this problem. Two, give yourself time to approach the New York State Legislature, which is the right door to knock on. The New York State Legislature is currently in recess. They will reconvene in the first week of January. They can help. As a matter of fact, there is a great deal of talk about what's called spin-up money, which is sort of a repayable loan that you can amortize over 5 or 10 years. we're entitled to about $25 million. If you don't wait until January, you can't even approach the legislature. And three, give yourself more time to look a little more responsibly at what cuts in economies can be made that do not directly injure our students. So yes, there is that solution, but the stubbornness at central office and I think the irresponsible behavior of those who can make that decision is preventing us from sparing our students.
The reports in the last, the last week or so indicated some hope that you and the superintendent would get in the room and that there would be some sort of a bargain or a deal and that maybe there was some progress there that both sides could find satisfaction with. How has that gone?
Well, first of all, we started the conversation with the superintendent about whether or not if everybody steps up, if he makes additional cuts at central office, if they postpone the disruption until the end of the school year, then we would be willing to consider what contribution teachers would be willing to make. And so we have just sent out a survey to all teachers to ask them what concessions, if any, would they recommend or they could live with. We will be tabulating those results over the next few days. We will be consulting with our representative assembly, and then we may be responding to the district. But if they don't postpone these irresponsible actions, then the whole issue becomes moot. What's the point of talking about concessions? If you rip these teachers away from the students, if you disrupt the students, the damage will have been done. Now, let me also say this to put things in perspective. $30 million out of a nearly $1 billion budget is less than 3%. If you had a 3% problem with your household budget, would you try to fix it on the backs of your children? I don't think so. So this is not a huge amount of money to find in a $1 billion budget and to lay off teachers, rip them away from children who are, by the way, very distressed, crying, and so are some of the teachers. I think that that's about the worst way to do it. And yes, we recognize that Superintendent Dade didn't create this problem. He inherited it. However, we're not impressed at all, nor are we in agreement with the manner in which he wants to resolve the problem.
Let's listen to some of the remarks from those who have blamed you. And I know you've taken your fair share of criticism over the decades, Adam. This is last Friday on this program. Robert Hoggard is a former candidate for Rochester City School Board. He was not victorious last year, but was one of the candidates in the field. He has worked in higher ed and now pursuing a degree from the Warner School of Education. And here is what he had to say on this program on Friday.
I want to point to the Rochester Beacon, and they published an article, "Is Dr. Urbanski the Real Superintendent?" And since 1987, he's been wielding too much power in the school district and hiding behind organized labor. And it's like, I want to see new leadership. It's time for new leadership, and we could make a nice retirement party for Dr. Urbanski. He served well in 1987 to 2019. 32 years. Before I was born, he was leading the school district with the same analysis and the same, we've been doing the same thing. And so when Terry Dade comes in and he says, when you look back at the district that I came from, it is a countywide system. We spend $3 billion to educate 187,000 students. The Rochester City School District spends $2 billion. I'll tell you why. They spend $1 billion in the operational budget, but then they spend another $1 billion in the modernization project. That's why you see the new Monroe High School. So it's like there's an appropriation issue that we have to deal with. And we have to stop having Dr. Urbanski sort of hide with his political shrewdness behind organized labor and sort of controlling dissent in the news. And what we have to do is we have to sort of move towards some solutions.
Robert Hoggard on Friday, what do you say to that?
I'm hard-pressed to respond. Most of it is nonsense. First of all, if I were the real superintendent, I would not be disrupting the lives of the children in the middle of the school year or the relationships that they have built with among themselves and their teachers. As far as vacating the position, that is a decision that teachers make. I'm not appointed to this position. I didn't inherit the position. I was elected to this position, and I was reelected every 2 years. So Mr. Haggard, instead of going out of this district, should maybe come back and make himself a candidate in the next RTA election, because he doesn't get to decide who's going to be the president of the union, nor do I. The teachers have the democratic right and responsibility to elect their spokespersons and their representative. Now, I don't know what is meant by hiding behind organized labor. I am proud to be in organized labor. I think organized labor built this country, and I think organized labor is our best hope for retaining fairness, due process, and democracy in this country, and to advocate for those who otherwise would be taken advantage of. So, no, I don't agree with him. I think that the teachers' union here in Rochester has provided continuity and stability over the years. I think we have proven that we advocate not only for our members, but for their students as well. And that's what we're doing in this struggle right now. We're speaking up for students who don't have a union, who don't have an organization that we are blessed to have. And that's the real motivation of all the teachers who are protesting in common cause with the parents of our students.
Who do you blame for this fiscal emergency?
Well, the people who are in charge of the budget. We are not in charge of the budget. Central office is in charge of the budget. The school board is in charge of the budget. They have the final say. They're supposed to approve or amend the regular reports that they get. Have they done that? When did they realize that they had a $64.8 million problem? And when they did, why are they condoning the blaming of teachers and the herding of students in order to fix the problem that they and central office budget people have created?
So central office, and if the board says, look, we have the oversight, but they farm out the work of the actual nuts and bolts budget creation to a team at central office. And so, you know, board members were as surprised as anybody else about how off the projections were. Do you buy that? Is that fair?
No, I don't buy it at all. They have the fiduciary responsibility, and nobody makes the final decision, not the budget folks at central office, not the superintendent. The school board does it. That's why they have a fiscal committee. That's why they have an audit committee. That's why they have all kinds of committees that are supposed to oversee and give the final thumbs up or thumbs down on these matters. But, you know, think about the audacity of saying, let's not blame the school board, but let's blame the teachers' union? Why? What's the role of teachers' union in this? We do not form their budget. We do not approve their budget. We have no say in their budget. But yet, when they mess up, it's the union that is being blamed. I think that that's scapegoating, and I don't think it should be tolerated.
I'm going to get back to that in just a second. Listeners, if you want to call the program, it's toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking to the leader of the Rochester Teachers Association, Adam Urbanski, who has been in that role as president for more than 30 years. And we're talking about these proposed cuts, these proposed mid-year cuts, that if the board approves on Thursday could take effect in January. And we're talking dozens of classrooms in which students are going to come back in January to different teachers And that's a, there's no question that's disruptive. Go ahead.
You know, the disruption is more than dozens because the layoff.
How many total?
Well, how many kids would be disrupted? Over 8,500.
But how many total teachers? Because you mentioned 150-something teaching
positions. 155 teachers would be laid off. But in addition to that, another 182 would be displaced.
Right, moved from one classroom to another.
Not only from one classroom, but from one school to another school, from one position to another position. So those are also real disruptions. So I think that the enormity of this disruption in and of itself should cause the board to reconsider.
Okay, and so before we get to some listener feedback here, well, here's an example of sort of the next place I was going to go in this conversation. David on Twitter says, not for nothing, the $30 million budget shortfall and the financial mismanagement are also unprecedented. It's not just mid-year cuts that would be unprecedented. And New York State is facing a $6 billion or so budget deficit for 2020. In other words, what David is saying is, yes, mid-year cuts to teaching positions would be unprecedented. We are in an unprecedented financial emergency, fiscal emergency, and to just say, well, New York State will handle this, they've got their own fiscal emergency.
No, we are not. This is not an unprecedented budget shortfall. When Jean-Claude Brissart was superintendent, he proposed cutting over 600 teachers. 2 weeks later, he left Rochester and went to Chicago. This is not an unprecedented problem. This is only an unprecedented wrong solution. I think that this cure is worse than the disease. I think that they should decide to do it right rather than to do it right away. And I'm not the only one. Teachers aren't the only ones. Parents are saying that. Children are saying that. Young people, students are saying that. The Board of Education should be ashamed for ignoring the voices of the parents and for suggesting that they know better or care more than the parents do as to what's best for the kids.
I think it should be easily agreed that this is an emergency if we're going to be cutting teachers or moving teachers, displacing teachers, having dozens, if not hundreds, of classrooms filled with Rochester students who are going to have different teachers in January. That is relationship building that is destroyed. Starting fresh. In many classrooms with students with special needs, with challenging circumstances, starting over in January. That would be hard enough in Pittsburgh. Now imagine it in Rochester. I think we should all agree that if that can be avoided, it must be avoided. The question I have for you is, if we can avoid that with some kind of one shot, whether it's spin up money from the state or call it a bailout, call it whatever you want, to pay enough to keep those teachers in the same classrooms through June, is it your contention that teaching positions shouldn't be cut in any number at all? And I ask that because the superintendent on this program indicated pretty strongly that he agrees with the criticism that the district has overhired teachers, particularly with the changing number of enrollment and with the shift in students moving to charter schools. Should there be, let's say we can get a one shot, let's say we can figure it out for this year, but starting for a long-term plan, starting in June, do we need to cut total number of teaching positions?
We may have to, but the time to do it would be at the end of the school year, not now. That's the whole point of the rebelling by parents and students and teachers against this proposed plan. If you have to make those kinds of adjustments, do them at the rational juncture, at the end of the school year, because then we might not even have to lose any of our youngest teachers, because we can absorb a lot of what otherwise would be layoffs through attrition. People retiring, people moving, people changing. And kids are also changing schools, changing classes. So it's not as disruptive. But let me also comment on one of the things that you say the superintendent had said, that, you know, we have overhired. No, we haven't.
That's not a direct quote, but he didn't disagree outright with some of the criticism that in recent years there's been an imbalance because of where students have gone in the overall enrollment?
Well, that's only a perspective of someone who looks at the surface and not at the reality. The reality is that until 3 years ago, we had zero reading teachers in this district. Zero reading teachers. How can you blame any superintendent who says that's wrong, and if we want reading scores to go up, we have to hire some reading teachers? We had no behavioral specialists. So in order to avoid or minimize any suspensions or expulsions, of course it was a good move to hire a behavioral specialist so that we can actually help the children rather than oust the children or leave them without any attention. So I don't think we overhired, and I don't think you can make that conclusion if you don't know what it is that we had before someone who really cared about the kids did the right thing and hired the professionals that we didn't have in this district.
So then let me try to represent not what Robert Hoggard said, but what the critics of Adam Urbanski or teachers, when you say, well, how could you blame teachers? I don't think people want to blame teachers, but the critics of labor, the critics of a union mm-hmm. would say mm-hmm. that you wouldn't stand for any cut. Even if we had 10 teachers for every one student, you wouldn't stand for any cuts.
No, that's not true. We know that we can't ask for something that isn't there. We know that we need to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So we're arguing with the timing of this, and we're arguing with the recommendation that this superintendent is making that would be so disruptive to our students. You know, it's very difficult for a teacher to witness students hurting because they have to see them every day for most of the day. Other than their families, these are the people that the children bond with, and these are the people who love and care about them the most. So we're arguing with the manner in which this is being done, and if any reducing of the numbers of teachers has to happen, it should happen at the end of the school year, not in the middle of the school year.
844-295-TALK. If you want to join the conversation with Adam Urbanski, president of the Rochester Teachers Association, it's 844-295-8255. It's 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. John in Rochester is first on the phone. Go ahead, John.
Is that me?
That's you, sir.
Okay. I'm sorry. Usually I get a click on the phone. I'm changing my question a little bit from what I had planned. In towns or cities where there are much more effective relationships between school boards, teachers, unions, etc., what is the difference in those towns? And what is the difference in the role of the union in towns like that when you come upon major issues such as this one?
Well, the best case scenario, of course, is when everyone collaborates towards the same end, because if the adults in the lives of children can't get their act together, then they can hardly expect that the kids would. So our first choice is to work together and to collaborate, and our experience will actually show that we want, as a first choice, to collaborate. But when we see management hurting our students, when we see them mismanage the budget and then blame the teachers and the students for it, then we join with parents in opposing them. So we're not saying that there should be no collaboration. We're saying that there should be no complicity when someone goes and proposes something that is clearly hurtful to our students.
I'm not sure that you answered my question at all. But I think what I'd rather do is just sit back and listen more.
Okay, John. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate that. Well, let me read a couple of emails. Valerie says, Certainly, I feel sympathy for the superintendent and the inheritance of this problem. But since the city school problem is an administrative one, what are the administrators doing to ease the burden on teachers and students? I once heard a report that some would give up vacation pay. What a small price to pay, while they are well paid and not as crucial to students as the teachers are. The district should have more conscience than to pull the earth out from beneath our students' feet. Can administrators give up things like vacation pay, Adam, without losing their jobs, but to help?
Well, to the best of my understanding, administrators didn't give up vacation pay. They conceded the cashing in of those days between January and June. But they don't lose vacation days. They just don't cash them in. Teachers don't have paid vacation days to give up. Non-teaching employees don't. Paraprofessionals don't. So we don't have those things to give up.
Okay. And let me take a different tack then from a listener who wants to talk about the fact that I think you mentioned that the total $30 million deficit is what represents what percentage of
the... About 3%.
All right. So Janice says... A $30 million deficit has grown to $60 million. It's only a 3% deficit, so let's wait to solve the problem? What is the rate of the growth of the deficit then? The union is not in charge of the budget, but what is their portion of this budget? Teacher salaries, benefits. I resent this being presented as Adam Urbanski having no influence on the budget, and that pleasure is being taken in trying to create a solution for this newly revealed disaster in an already disastrous, dysfunctional school district. That comes from Janice. So on the subject of the percentage, she's saying, you're blowing it off like it's $30 million, $60 million, it's only 3%, but that becomes 5%, it becomes 7%. You cannot blow it off.
No, I'm not blowing it off. I'm just putting it into perspective. And I think that Janice is wrong to say what percentage of that cost of her teachers is the union's. The cost of the union at the city school district is zero. Zero. So... Is she suggesting that the fact that the district has to pay teachers is something that the union can do something about? No. Teachers in Rochester deserve competitive salaries, and if they don't get competitive salaries, then our students will not be competitive in attracting the best teachers to our schools and to our classrooms. So no teacher needs to apologize for the salaries that they make. These are professionals who deserve professional-level salaries.
I think that her point, it sounds like the 3% idea is being minimized when this is a crisis.
No, I'm not minimizing it. I know that $30 million is a lot of money, and I know that $60 million is a lot of money. I'm just putting it in perspective. But what should they do? They should manage the budget competently. That's what they should do. But they should not accrue such huge deficits and then blame the union, blame the teachers, and blame the students.
All right. Your friend, Mr. Hoggard, follows up to say that Dr. Urbanski can't just blame the school board. After all, RTA and NYSET spent more than $200,000 in the last school board election, advocating for candidates, by the way, that won. And your idea to borrow off of future aid is one that could force us into insolvency.
I disagree. We didn't spend $200,000.
How much did NYSET and RTA spend?
I don't know how much NYSET spent, but I can tell you that RTA is prohibited from giving money to school board members. NYSET is our registered lobbying group, the state union, and you would have to ask NYSET to see how much money they spent. I don't know that.
But these are your candidates who won.
They're not my candidates.
They're nice New York State United Teacher candidates.
They're not New York State United Teachers candidates. They are their own people.
Supported and they by NYSET, though.
Well, but they're supported by others as well. And there is no direct connection between supporting a candidate and then expecting anything in return. So I think he makes some leaps of judgment and leaps of logic that he also allowed himself to make during his time here on WXXI last week.
All right. Well, regarding borrowing, a spin-up borrowing. So in other words, what do we know, Adam, what the number is? If we're going to lay off no teachers next month, if we need to just cover teachers, every teacher in front of students stays in the same classroom, what's the number we need? How many millions?
I think about $8 or $9 million.
Okay, if we're going to get there, if it's a
for the rest of the
For the rest of the school year, yes. If we're going to get there and it's done through this spin up, in other words, an advance in future aid that you'd have to borrow against, Mr. Hoggart is concerned that borrowing is only going to put us in a future hole that's even bigger.
Yes, I know that. But look, borrowing is not a novel concept. If you have an emergency, the kind of an emergency where it hurts your children, the idea of borrowing money is not alien to you. You can repay that in an amortized way for over 5 or 10 years. And once again, let me put it in perspective. If you amortize it over 10 years, that's $2.5 million a year in a billion-dollar budget. That's not an outlandish idea. And by the way, that's the reason why you never hear of mid-year cuts, because every district that ever found itself in this kind of a predicament, whether it's Yonkers or Albany or Buffalo or Syracuse or Rochester, has taken that recourse of advance loan to be repaid over a certain number of years.
And before we get to our only break, and then we'll come back, take more of your feedback for Adam Urbanski from the Rochester Teachers Association, what is the timeline for the rest of this week then? Because the board could vote on Thursday. You have said that the survey is out to your teachers trying to look for solutions, but that's all off the table if the board goes ahead with these cuts on Thursday.
Correct.
So what are you doing the rest of the week? You have more meetings, any other negotiations or work that you're doing behind closed doors before Thursday?
Well, we have some meetings, hopefully, but we have to have meetings among ourselves first to make sure that what it is that we're proposing is something that has a good chance of being approved by teachers. We don't want to give false hope. But what will happen, and it's pivotal, is that on Thursday, parents, students, teachers, community people will rally against the current proposed plan and urge the board to give themselves a chance and thereby give our students a chance by at least delaying all this until they can see if they can get additional funding from the state. And better yet, delay it until the end of the school year if you really mean to put students first and if it's not just empty rhetoric that students come first.
What do you think the board is going to do this week?
I think they might delay, but probably not for long enough. But if they don't delay, then what's the point of talking about concessions? What's the point about lobbying the state for spin-up money? In other words, they will have slammed the door on any collective solution if they vote this Thursday to accept the current version of the superintendent's recommendation.
Adam Urbanski is our guest. Let's get that only break, and we're right back with him and your feedback for him next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections, is Bitcoin dying? In the spirit of Monty Python, perhaps it would say, I'm not dead yet. We're going to talk 2020 cryptocurrency and what we learned of the year in money in our first hour. In our second hour, the winners of the Environmental Sustainability Awards from the Seneca Park Zoo Society. And in particular, thinking about food sustainability. Talk with you Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We've had listeners asking, what happens to teachers who are displaced? What happens to those who would lose their jobs? Displaced is different than laid off. Mm-hmm. If you're displaced, you could end up in a different building entirely or different classrooms, and you're starting fresh with a new classroom. Whereas if you're laid off, you're laid off. And if you're laid off, you're a free agent. You can go work somewhere else.
If you're displaced, it's a disruption.
Yeah.
But you don't lose your job. But it's a huge disruption in the relationships, and it's not a good thing. If you're laid off, then as of January 1, you have no paycheck, you have no health insurance, you're really being put in a very difficult situation. And so that's why this week, actually, tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday, actually starting today, we have arranged for recruitment sessions, because Buffalo called us, Syracuse called us, Greece, New York called us, Bosse's called us. other places have called us and said, we're sorry that this is happening to you, but there is a huge shortage of teachers in this state and in this country. We have lots of opening positions. We want to come and talk to the teachers who are being laid off so that we can offer them positions in our district on the spot. On the spot. They're sending the recruiters here to hire these people. So if we don't know after tonight or tomorrow whether the board is planning to postpone this, then it'll be too late. These people, and you can't blame them, will have secured positions elsewhere.
All right, back to the phones we go, and it's another former candidate for school board and your friend, a former teacher, Howard Eagle. Hi, Howard.
How you doing, Evan?
Very good, sir.
Dr. Bansky, how are you?
Mr. Eagle, hi.
How you doing? I have a question for you, but a couple of facts. The unions, nicer than others, absolutely, it's a fact, did spend $200,000 in the most recent election with your so-called Palm, Slate, Powell, Adams, LeBron, and Malloy. You spent probably $100,000 on literature. You even sent it to candidates who were opposing them. I got it myself. But that's one fact. Another fact is you mentioned that this nation was built on organized labor. That's not exactly true. In fact, the sweat, blood, tears of my ancestors built the infrastructure of this nation. Then organized labor helped later. You know, so just to be factual about that, also, you mentioned overhiring. According to Mr. Dade, 632 teachers have been hired over the last 4 years, while we know that the population has continued to go down. That's his figure. But the question that I wanted to ask revolves around that last point. It was good to hear Mr. Dawson ask you, if we can put this off until the end of the year, is it possible that we may have to cut the total number of teachers? And you said, yes, that's possible. But however, you might be able to save some of the younger teachers through attrition and so forth. And so then a question is this a time for us to talk about LIFO, you know, last in, first out? Because we talk in this district about the need to attract and retain teachers of color and so forth, and we know some have been hired, but they're going to be the first ones out of the door if cuts happen mid-year or end of the year. And there's no discussion about that at all. And if you can save some of those teachers through attrition, isn't it a good idea to have those elderly teachers declare right now that they're going to retire and so forth? Because usually that becomes rhetoric. You know, with the retirement incentive that just took place, that was supposed to, according to you, that was supposed to create an opportunity to hire more young teachers of color as well as others, but young teachers of color in particular. And I'm not so sure how effective that was. But, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric around all the issues in this except racism. We don't want to talk about racism. And I know you acknowledge it, but you don't talk much about what needs to happen if we're going to deal with it. So I'd like to hear your thinking around those issues.
All right, Howard, thank you very much. Go ahead, Adam.
Mr. Eagle, on the issue of seniority, in other words, last in, first out, that is not just a matter of the contract. That is a matter of state law. State law requires it. Case law, which challenged the state law, requires it. And the Board of Regents regulations require it. So it's not something that we have any prerogative in for seniority. On affirmative action, I have been and remain a proponent of affirmative action. I believe it is important for students to see teachers in front of them who look like them, who know them, their history, their culture, the realities. So I'm very much in favor of that. And on the first question that you raise about, do I recognize that it may be necessary to reduce the positions and to excess teachers at the end of the school year? Of course I do. But I am arguing now against the kind of disruptive mid-year cuts that would be hurtful, not just to those teachers, but especially to the students, to their students, and to other students who are affected by it because of the displacements.
Let me follow up a little bit on what Mr. Eagle is saying there. First of all, in regards to last in, first out, mm-hmm. I think what Howard is pointing to is this. every district claims they want more diversity in the teaching ranks, and it's hard for districts to get that, to achieve that. It takes effort, it takes work, it takes sometimes recruitment. In the city of Rochester, for example, the number of teachers of color, the last I checked, and this is like 3 years ago, something like 25%. What's the number now? Do you know?
Of
teachers in Rochester, what percent are white?
About 70 to 75%
are white. Yeah.
Yes.
But if I were to look at the last 30 teachers hired,
yeah.
50 teachers hired,
yeah.
would it be still 70 to 75% white, or would it be more teachers of color?
Maybe a little more, but it would be in that area because, you know, there was a time when persons of color had fewer options than teaching or nursing or whatever. Now, fortunately, the options are increased. And so there is a huge shortage of teachers of color in this country. And I had been recommending to this district that more aggressive recruitment at historically black colleges in Puerto Rico and so forth, and even recommending that those recruitment excursions include some of our best and most exemplary teachers, especially teachers of color, but that has fallen on deaf ears as well.
So that hasn't happened?
Well, I think some of that is happening. I don't think that it's happening to the extent that it could be happening, especially if you involve the practitioners themselves in it, because they're more credible to prospective recruits.
So just let me ask if you agree with what Howard is framing here. I don't hear Howard Eagle saying that Superintendent Dade or anybody is just intentionally planning to lay off teachers of color in higher numbers. However, if we already have a situation where 3 out of 4 teachers on average in the school district are white, when that doesn't come close to being a representative population number compared to the students.
Right.
And if we have had even moderate success, not huge success, but let's say the last 100 teachers, let's say 40 were teachers of color out of 100, and that would be an improvement. Then, if you've got last in, first out, this is an intentionally or not, a racist set of layoffs because you are disproportionately laying off teachers of color, frankly, the ones you've been recruiting and desperate to put into these roles to begin with. Is that a racist set of layoffs?
Well, I think so, and I agree. And that's one more argument, as if you needed more arguments, for delaying this until the end of the school year when you will have retirements, when you will have resignations, and therefore you, through attrition, can absorb some of the layoffs, what otherwise would be layoffs, and retain a larger portion of teachers of color. This is the position that one of the board members took, and I don't think she's wrong about it.
All right, Howard, thank you. Let me get back to your phone calls, get through as many as we can here. Dan in Hilton is next. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, first I'd like to say that I am not in favor of the school letting teachers go at this point. But my question is, how many actually days are left in the school year when you take away Christmas holidays, spring break, Martin Luther King, whatever the holidays are, how many actual days are left in the school year?
I haven't counted the days, but I can tell you have more than half of the school year left.
Okay. But you don't know how many days out of the half would be taken up by vacation.
Oh, no, that's not counting vacation. But the actual school days, when kids show up in school, you have approximately 100 days left, which is more than half of the student's academic school year.
Okay. The point I'm trying to make is in favor of leaving the teachers where they are. If they count the days where they will not be in school, that will reduce the number of days left in the year. And that in itself should be a factor in keeping the teachers where they are rather than disrupting, as you have mentioned in your comments today, of letting teachers go. And I feel that sometimes people listen to numbers, and sometimes people listen to facts, and sometimes people don't listen at all. But I just wanted to add that point in to hopefully that might have a bearing on their decision.
I'm glad to hear you say that because that's really common sense. And our problem lately has been that common sense is not so common.
Dan, thank you. Let's go to Jan in Webster next. Go ahead, Jan.
Yes, I have really no big dog in this fight. My children are grown. I live outside the district, and I'm not a member of the union. However, I have subs for the past 4 years, and my observation has been it's only this year that I have seen real substantial difference in the attitudes of the students and the and atmosphere of the schools. Less violence, less acting out, more enthusiasm on the part of students, teachers. We are dealing with a district where approximately a third of the kids have experienced trauma in their home lives, which leads to behavior problems, which leads to classroom disruption. Anyone who thinks that you can control 25 students with one teacher when a third of those kids has some significant difficulties has never, ever stepped inside a classroom. All these other arguments about who's going to get laid off and da-da-da-da-da, they're all secondary to do you want to have a generation of kids educated and socialized and ready to hit the work world in 10 years, or do you not? And I think it's time everybody started to just focus on that. Stop blaming the unions or whoever in our democratic state with our democratic city and our democratic school board has allowed a $30 million budget gap to arise, needs to be held accountable, and our teachers need to be left in place. That's my comment.
Thank you, Jim.
I meant every word you said, Jim.
So you want to endorse that?
Well, yes, I think he's making sense. It should be all about the kids. And so when you juxtapose that logic to what is being proposed, something's wrong with this picture, because no one has yet argued that this isn't most painful for the students. So they don't challenge that, but they act as if that weren't the reality.
Todd says, if your guest wants the cuts to happen at the end of the school year, will he support an immediate across-the-board pay cut to match the salary and benefit savings resulting from their dismissal until the end of the year?
I'm sorry, I'm not understanding what the question is.
He wants to, would you support an immediate across-the-board pay cut? I think to help, you keep the teachers in the same jobs, keep them in front of the students, but there's an across-the-board pay cut and benefit cut for everybody.
I do not support an immediate across-the-board pay cut for teachers. I do not support denying teachers health care benefits, which I consider to be a matter of human rights. I think that this district would pay for it 100-fold if they did that, because this district would become a pariah to prospective teachers or even to teachers who are here now. That's not the way to solve the problem. The problem was caused by mismanagement of the budget by central office. The solution shouldn't be for the kids and their teachers to pay for it.
Are you worried that this frustration you're feeling with the new superintendent is going to damage your relationship with him going forward?
No, not at all. I think he's a gentleman. I think he has good intentions. I think he made a very serious blunder in proposing this plan. We disagree on the approach. This is not personalized. I hope that he will remain here and be successful, because if he succeeds, we all succeed, and especially our students succeed. So absolutely not. I have an issue with what he's proposing. I don't have an issue with him.
What do you make of the students and the parents who've protested in the last week?
I'm proud of them. We cannot organize or lead student protests, but we certainly can publicly admire their self-advocacy and exercising the right for free assembly and free speech. And I am impressed and in admiration of the students. And by the way, it's about time that parents spoke up on behalf of their children. And I'm very proud and very encouraged by what I see as parents taking the leadership role in opposing these hurtful mid-year cuts and we are in common cause with those parents.
In the last minute and a half here, my guess is the superintendent would say nobody wants these kinds of cuts. If we don't have better alternatives, we've got to make the hard choices. And we can't just assume New York State's going to solve this for us. We have to be responsible. What do you say going forward, knowing that we're 3 days away from these possible cuts?
I can only repeat what we have been saying now for weeks, if not months. Do not do this in the middle of the school year. Period. Let's work together to heighten the chances of getting additional aid from the state. But let's think of the kids first. Postpone everything until June, and let's work together to resolve this, whatever it takes.
What has to happen in the next 3 days for you to see the outcome you want on Thursday night?
The board has to reject the current formulation of the proposal and commit to making the adjustments at the end of the school year in June, and then let's all roll up our sleeves and work together in unison on behalf of our students.
Are you an optimist?
I am. You cannot be a leader and a pessimist. You could be a dictator and a pessimist, but you have to be optimistic, and this is the time for optimism, not for pessimism.
Adam Urbanski is the president of the Rochester Teachers Association. This is a massively important week. As he says, he's been in that position since the early 1980s and cannot remember, and there haven't been in decades, mid-year cuts at this scale. And so that's what we're looking at. There are more students protesting and demonstrating this morning. We're going to see a school board meeting and could have a vote on Thursday, but a lot to happen in the next 3 days. Thanks for being here, and let's talk more soon.
Thank you.
As always, Adam Urbanski. Our thanks today to the entire team. Bob volunteering. Megan Mack is, of course, the producer and the engineer, and just about every part of the brains behind this program. I'm just the voice. And wherever you are, have a nice afternoon. We'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.